I'll call the November 3rd Common Council meeting to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Dandrea.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderwoman Evans.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Present.
Alderwoman Mayer.
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I remind everybody to do what I'm about to do, put your phones on vibrate, or turn them off. Otherwise, they're going to be ringing during the meeting. We do have a properly noticed and meeting and a quorum. First item of business, item B1, citizens comment period. Any citizen wishing to speak on any item, please come forward. I know there's five back there. Any citizen wishing to speak on any issue? Mr. Lewandowski, name and address, please, for the record. Told you. You guys didn't believe me. Was that you, Ken?
No. I turned mine off.
Leroy Lewandowski, 8030 West Winston Way. I just want to report to you and the Common Council about the situation in my neighborhood whereby the Department of Public Works tore up the curbs on 77th Street. And that right now is the only way in and out on that end of town or our subdivision to get in and out. And they tore it up to put new curbs or repair them. There was no reason to do that at this time when 76th Street is blocked and we can't get out, and that street's the only street we can get through to get out of there. There's no, and when they did it, they only put cones up. People are walking in the road, and also they should be putting these barrels up there with the flashing lights. It's ridiculous. They have to put up with that stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewandowski. By the way, I'm pleased that tonight is the first meeting of our new city engineer, Glenn Morrow. So if you see him in the hall, please welcome him. Anyone else wishing to speak? Go ahead, Tom.
What'd you do, break his arm to get him here?
He drove a hard bargain.
Yeah.
I thought his first name was Tom.
Any other citizens wishing to speak? Okay, going once, going twice. I'll close the citizen comment period. Item B2, mayoral announcements. Item I, or 1, status of hiring an additional building inspector. One has been selected. We're waiting for physical and,
November 17th.
There we go. You guys heard it? No, I heard it. Alderwoman Wilhelm.
That, you said the additional, but one, is that the one that replaced one that left, or is that the previous one that we never hired?
It's a replacement, 2014 budget.
Put that one in, and then the one from the previous year that we approved that we never hired.
In 2015.
Thank you.
You're welcome. In your packet was a item on communicable diseases by the health officer. Purpose of this item actually was to inform you that we've been Ebola to death, so to speak. I just wanted everybody to know that your health staff and your first responders do have a plan and a protocol. I just wanted to let you know that. Item 3, school resource officer grant update. You all received communication from the chief relative to a COPS grant. We approached the school district relative to if they wanted to, again, cost share, perhaps add the additional officer for next year in next year's budget prior to our budget adoption. And it's my understanding school district was not able to do that. So that's off the table. So the chief has notified the federal government that we will not accept the grant. So that's item B. Item C, approval of the regular meeting minutes of October 21st. Additions or corrections?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G. G1, Resolution authorizing certain officials to execute an agreement with Buxton Company to provide community retail economic development needs and satisfaction studies, recruitment and retention professional consulting. Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, we have Corey's here from Buxton, and I'd like to help clarify some concerns or questions that people had regarding what services they provide. And I guess he's prepared to do that.
I am. Can we actually hook in through the VGA? Is it possible?
Well, the Buxton officials getting set. I will note for the council that this is an action item both tonight and tomorrow night. I let this go on out of respect for the EDC, full well intending on this to be acted on tomorrow night if the council so pleases to move it to put it in context of everything else.
So what are we doing tonight then as opposed to tomorrow? What's the difference?
Tomorrow night you'll get additional information on services wrapped in the retail area proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make this decision, whether it's this decision or something else, in full context. Alderman Wong.
Well, I guess I'd like to say that if we do nothing as far as TIF district, this is still a necessary item. You know, if we're ever going to do anything for recruiting businesses. So I don't see it as dependent on what we do tomorrow night. I see it as something that would be needed regardless of what we do. So I'd just like to keep that in mind.
I can go ahead and start and kind of set up the background of why I'm here and so forth to further address the question. So I am Cody Howell, Vice President with the Buxton Company. First, I would like to say thank you, Mayor, Alderman, Alderwoman. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk with you tonight. Many of you may recall that back in June, we actually provided the City of Franklin with a retail leakage surplus analysis that really identified that a significant amount of retail dollars were being spent or leaked outside of your political jurisdiction, meaning that your constituents were traveling outside of Franklin to purchase the goods and services that they required. We identified that roughly 20% of the total retail and retail-related, and when I say retail, I'm talking restaurants, obviously traditional retailers, apparel, grocery stores, and so forth, were being spent outside. Through that, it led to us coming out early August to actually present at that time how our company in the last 12 years has partnered with over 670 communities across the country, specifically for business retention and retail recruitment purposes. Since that time, my understanding is that there's been quite additional conversations internally with both the Economic Development Commission and other parties as far as is retail recruitment that focus, and then how moving forward is that going to be implemented. So tonight I just wanted to take the opportunity not to rehash and go through everything that we did several weeks ago, but really to highlight the advantages of Buxton and what sets us apart and makes us unique within that industry. And as we get going here, I've really pointed out four distinct key advantages or differences about Buxton in the marketplace. You can see there on the screen, once we get that blown up, that I've pulled just a snippet there from your website as far as the vision, the plan moving forward for Franklin, that really the vision is to enhance that quality of life. And what we know is that retail is a huge component of quality of life, both for existing or current residents and then also future residents moving forward. So really a retail recruitment addresses and aligns directly with that. But I really wanted to get started simply by going through the four key distinct differentiators of Buxton within the marketplace. The first being that we have a proven track record of success that we'll highlight in a moment across multiple verticals. Obviously, within the public sector, working directly with municipalities for the purpose of economic development, but also within several other verticals within the private sector that really lends to our clients' success. The third of those is the approach that we take, and we take a retail-centric approach. So bringing essentially our best foot forward out of the private sector into the public sector. The third being the breadth, depth of the data that we possess and allows us to do what we do essentially for our community partners. When you partner with Buxton, it's not about purchasing data. It's not about even having access to data. When it comes to big data, no one in the country has more consumer behavior data than Buxton. But what the difference is, and the key to that is what we do with that data, how we make that data blend to the answers that you're specifically looking for and laying out that retail development roadmap, and how do you see that success moving forward. And then the fourth is the technology side piece of that, not only the technology that we leverage and use to deliver these answers to you, but also the technology we use internally that directly mirrors how a retailer will view the marketplace. So essentially, in 1994, so 20 years, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, Buxton was founded specifically in the retail sector. So helping retailers make more strategic site selection decisions. And how Buxton came about is the founder of our company, Tom Buxton, previously was with the Tandy Corporation, so Radio Shack. And he was tasked with opening new locations on the ground. At that time, consumer behavior data was not widely adopted within the retail industry. And so how he would go about that is looking at two locations and looking at a simple radial ring, 1-3 mile, as you may know it, and looking at certain population metrics, in other words, thresholds that it had to meet to say that's a good location. And what he would find is that locations based off of those parameters would end up performing very, very differently. On the surface, they looked identical, but one would end up being a high performer, the other a low performer. So at that time, he knew there has to be more to that. So at that point, that's when he branched off and really pioneered Buxton and the use of consumer analytics within that industry. So really pioneering, it's not location, 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 as I'm sure you've heard in the real estate world many, many times. It's really customer, customer, customer. A retailer could have Type A real estate, the best real estate available in the world, corner of Main and so forth. But essentially, if the right consumer base, their preferred consumer, is not prevalent in that market, it's essentially a piece of dirt to that retailer. So at that time is when we started working directly with major retailers. Today, we work with about 2,000 major retailers across the market. And again, when I say retail, think of that literally any location that has a cash register, anyone that complete a transaction. So restaurants, grocery stores, apparel, quick-serve dining restaurants, and so forth. And what we specifically do is help them identify home-run locations, but more importantly, mitigate the risk of opening a potential poor-performing location. People like Applebee's, casual dining restaurant, we help them identify what markets can they add a secondary or even a tertiary location without over-cannibalizing that market. Where are they not meeting the need of those specific consumers? People like a How Do You Roll, you may not be familiar with that concept. They currently only have about 10 locations on the ground. It's basically a Subway-type concept that's focused on sushi. They partner with Buxton to essentially grow out their emerging brand. We're helping them do that now as they move across the country. We do a significant amount of work within the healthcare sector. So working directly with major healthcare providers and networks, understand who their patient base is and what are those specific specialty clinics that they require. People like a Florida hospital system. They were initially our very first client within the healthcare space about 8 years ago, still a client of Buxton's today. Understanding in what markets do they need to add what I'll call a specialty clinic. So you're not seeing major healthcare hospitals open up anymore. You're seeing what we call the hub and spoke approach. Major hospital surrounded by specialty clinics. We're the firm behind these healthcare networks identifying what clinic do they need. As a result of the work in those two spaces, we've done, obviously have been widely recognized by private equity firms. Some of the country's largest private equity firms have sought Buxton out to specifically help them assess the level of risk with certain portfolios, do competitive analysis, and understand those different types of components of their business as they continue to assess certain portfolios for growth. As a result of that work, obviously, we're widely recognized across multiple verticals, and we are truly considered the industry leader when it comes to the consumer analytics umbrella. So within the retail world, we're considered the most influential company in retail. Harvard Business Review has recognized us. We're recognized as one of the most innovative companies, really because of the level of insights and intuitive nature that we bring into those sectors. We're strategic partners directly with ICMA. You may be very familiar with the International City Managers Association. They lean on us to bring these type of insights into the public sector and to the city managers. As a result of the work in all of the different sectors I've talked about so far, in 2002, we began working in the public sector, so what we term internally community ID. And really what happened at that time is municipalities identified that they no longer could sit back and wait for retailers to come to them, but that they had to take a proactive stance in identifying the right retailers, restaurants, grocery stores that currently are not located within their community but should be. And then when they decide to focus their efforts on proactive retail recruitment, helping them to have the type information that those retailers want and need to see in that site selection process. So essentially, making our community partners experts when it comes to retail by leveraging our retail expertise. Since that time, I mentioned earlier, we've worked with 670 communities across the country, ranging from those as small as 1,200 in size all the way up to major metros. A vast amount of experience in various regionalities, urban densities. As a result of our partnerships, over 35 million square feet of new retail has proactively been recruited into these communities, not to mention the tax increases, the quality of life, and so forth that that brings to the table. And really, it all starts with bringing the private sector into the public sector. In other words, bringing our best foot forward and what we know about retail to our community partners. And really, there's three key foundational parts to the process. And this is one of the biggest things that sets Buxton apart from any other potential avenue that's in the market. It's the methodology that we employ. We're not just comparing you based on demographics. We're not asking you to provide us a list of retailers that you're interested in and then comparing you to their portfolio. We are proactively going out, identifying from our vast, robust database of retailers which ones have not only locations on the ground in markets just like yours, but which ones have successful locations on the ground. And that's very, very important. As you start recruiting a retailer and focusing your efforts, any time, resources, and so forth that's spent towards that effort must be used efficiently. If you sit back and select retailers, you don't know the true likelihood of are they expanding in your market? Do they even want to locate here? That's what we bring to the table through understanding not only those key components we talked about when we were here prior, understanding your market trade area, knowing that based off your political boundaries, you may be just shy of 36,000 in population. But if we look at a 10 to even 15-minute trade area, which is what a retailer is going to view you as, you're well over 100,000 in size. But then understanding who those individuals are as a consumer, not demographically, because essentially that tells a retailer nothing about if you're going to shop in their store or dine in their restaurant. But then understanding what does that workplace population look like? And then what are those other retail market conditions that retailers really truly look at? So co-tenancies, adjacencies, those other area draw factors. All those things that really speak to the available market share within the market for their respective brand. Through understanding those key components and all of that working together with what we know about the private sector, we're able to identify the strongest matches for Franklin. So out of the entire world of retailers, who are the strongest fits for you? Who, if you focus those efforts on, are most likely to truly locate here? So going through, once we know that information and taking what we call your unique thumbprint, and identifying those retailers, again, grocery, restaurants, apparel, you name it, anyone that could fall under that retail umbrella, we take that subset of retailers and then we help develop out all of that market validation, the implementation piece of this that's absolutely crucial for those retailers. So mirroring exactly what they request from Buxton in their site selection process, site scores, main contact information for those decision makers. But then more importantly, being there for you as you continue into the implementation phase. Every single one of our clients is provided with a dedicated team of resources consisting of an account executive with a tremendous amount of private sector, obviously, knowledge, GIS experts, research analysts, obviously full access to myself, the rest of my counterparts within the executive staff. We are truly there as a third-party partner for you as you start to implement your roadmap. At various ICSC conferences or other retail deal-making conferences, we're there in support of you. Just several weeks ago, the ICSC regional event was held in Chicago. Many of our clients were there and had meetings proactively set with retailers. Retailers that we found maybe not were the strongest of fit for them, that we wouldn't say proactively, really focused the efforts on that. There's other opportunities, low-hanging fruit. But they were able to secure meetings with other retailers. We met with them, with that retailer, provided market validation information for those retailers that the retailer was going to ask them for, and we're truly there as a partner for them. So the beginning of the process does start with that market research, the identification of those retailers, but then really from that point is when we move into the implementation phase. And that's where Buxton has a tremendous amount of experience. We're a staff of over 130 individuals located out of Dallas, Fort Worth, and Texas. When it comes to the ability and the capability to implement, we're unparalleled in the marketplace. We do use technology to deliver the answers, the insights that we provide, but we're not a technology firm. We're not a data provider. We use data and source data, again, to help you lay out that retail development roadmap and focus your efforts on the right retailers. So it's not that we're a glorified iPad or you couldn't think of us as a market research website online. We use technology to make our implementation more efficient for our partners. I hope going through this has cleared up some of the misconception or confusion in terms of who Buxton is and what really sets us apart in the marketplace. But I am happy to answer and address any questions that anyone may have or could think of.
I think, Mr. Howell, my major concerns, well, I have a couple of concerns. My major one as mayor is, what is the deliverable offered by Buxton for $50,000 a year?
Sure. So,
we've got the marketing stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't see a contract that gives us what the deliverable.
So we did go back and provide a more expanded scope of work that in the appendix. It does have very, very detailed. But essentially the deliverable is identifying those right retailers. So if it's 20 retailers, the specific 20 retail brands to focus on, and then all the market validation behind those individual retailers. So developing out essentially what a retailer considers to be a site packet. So as they go into site committee meetings, there's a packet of information that they look at. So they're evaluating numerous sites, many times up to 10 sites to narrow down to one. And what they're looking at is a very specific site selection packet that contains all of the market validation, comparable locations they have on the ground, all of that validation for them.
Okay, but Buxton does not provide us the documentation and does not provide us with face-to-face with the retailer.
So what we do is we get you in communication with that retailer. So reaching out on your behalf, whether it's via just an initial warm-up letter, phone calls, emails, whatever it takes to get you connected with that retailer, which many times can be one of the most challenging pieces. But also, as you continue forward, we are there as a partner with you.
So you would make the initial phone call?
Absolutely.
You would make the call.
We do that.
XYZ company saying,
we are
there. You're going to receive a phone call from Franklin, Wisconsin. Please take that call.
Absolutely. Okay. We do that on your behalf. There's things that through that process, as you continue on and focus on retailers, that city leaders have to be involved in. no one can work on your behalf talking if it's things like incentives or permitting or zoning or those type things, that no one but yourself can address those. So as we continue forward and you get in those conversations, if you would like us to be, we're a part of those conversations with you to be, again, that market validation piece.
In your data packet, do you take into account when you look at trade areas, what distances do you, and I'm leading on here, I've said this a million times, we've got the largest shopping center in the state of Wisconsin 2 miles down the road from the
sure.
area we're talking about.
Sure.
When people come to me and say, we got leakage, I'm here to tell you we got leakage. On purpose.
Sure.
They're going north because that's where the stores are.
Absolutely.
So how does your data package take that reality and tailor it to our specific needs and desires?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that two different ways. I'm going to start by saying early on in the market research piece is really truly quantifying what is your overall retail trade area. And that's where we're looking at all those kind of factors. So looking at the road networks, the density, all those things, but also the existing retail landscape, because that does prohibit certain individuals traveling past those type roadblocks, I'll call them, to come to Franklin or so forth, drawing your individuals outside of there. All of that is part of that equation. But then more importantly, as we start to match and identify the right retailers, we are looking at varying trade areas specific to those individual retailers. In other words, you can't take, say, a 15-minute trade area and say that's blanket for all types of retail, because it's simply not. A grocery store, they're only going to look at a trade area of around 7 to 10 minutes because they care about who's at sustainable shopping. Restaurant categories, they're going to look at varying trade areas in terms by day part. So they're going to look at during the lunch hours, they're probably going to look closer to 10 to 12 minutes. But then in the evening for dinner, they're going to look 12 to 15 minutes. So we're looking at varying trade areas specific to each retailer. But a piece of that is also what's currently on the ground, what's going on in your market.
What's your database like for reaching those local retailers, the mom and pops and the boutiques?
Sure. So again, our database consists of over 5,000. Absolutely, it's national chains, but it goes all the way down to regional chains as well. Now, once you get below retailers that have fewer than, say, 2 to 3 locations on the ground, those are more ones that on the front, if you say, look, there's a local entrepreneur here that has a single location, we'd be interested in talking to them. We do custom matching, custom analysis for them, because it's more of just simply saying, how similar are you to their existing location? We can't distinguish between two locations, which one's a high performer and low performer. There's too much variability there. So what we're doing then is looking at how sustainable could their concept be? How similar are you to that existing store?
Alderman Schmidt.
Since you specialize in the marketing, the recruitment, and retention, I know you're not engaged as real estate brokers, and you've in your literature, your letter, you mentioned that precludes you from being more biased in your approach. Could you explain a little bit how you see the difference between your approach and what a potential real estate developer would view as trying to market to a company?
Absolutely. So, and Alderman Schmidt, I'm guessing you're referring to really the conflict of interest piece that we specifically point out. We're not brokers. We firmly believe in public-private partnerships. So being there, partnering with you, getting your local brokers involved. There's other firms out there that are commercial brokers that I've heard of having some ruffled feathers internally from partnering with third party or outsourcing that. But essentially, it's the methodology. It's all the data that we have in our possession and what we know about the private sector that allows us to unearth what are those best opportunities. We're not massaging data. We have no stake in the ground at the end of the day for that individual retailer. If they come to one community over the others, there's no back-end broker fees. There's none of those different things. I could not, if I were a broker and did it all for you, I could not represent two neighboring communities and there not be a conflict of interest. So where they are completely unbiased, we're a third party. We have communities, obviously, all over the place that are neighboring communities. And essentially, at the end of the day, there's always a significant amount of trade area overlap. So you have retailers that are probably a good fit in both cases. We represent those clients in the same manner. We present the data to that retailer. And in that case, oftentimes it comes down to other factors outside of the data component in that case. Maybe it's incentives, or maybe it's how easy those city councils are to deal with from that retailer's perspective.
And have you, or do you have any clients, other clients within the southeastern Wisconsin area region?
So currently in southeastern Wisconsin, no. We have worked with Milwaukee, several others throughout the state, but currently not working with anyone in Wisconsin. We do a tremendous amount of work in the Chicagoland area, in the northeast Chicagoland area, in that area, but currently in southeastern Wisconsin, no.
So this would be like new territory for you
then? You would have a complete competitive advantage over anyone in the market.
Alderman Evans.
You said you partnered with 670 communities. Do you follow up with them after 3 years? Do you have a percentage of your success stories and your failures?
Sure. So an overall percent, no. What I do have is, and I'll actually send this to you, we have numerous clients that have come back and done case studies, provided us their level of success. We've wrapped that up. Obviously into handouts for our clients. I have a PDF I'll send you that contains about 22 different communities and the success they saw. If you visit our website, I believe that was sent out as well. There's over a dozen client testimonials on our website. It varies from success. I know Rochelle, Illinois, they had 50 retailers they recruited in a matter of the first 3 years. Kingsport, Tennessee has seen tremendous amount of success. So it varies by community and how they measure success, if it's in terms of sales tax increase or property tax or whatever it may be.
But have you had failures?
Absolutely, there has been some failures. But more often what it comes down to is the most common reason we see communities not be successful is that they're not what I'll call retail friendly. In other words, they'll take the stance of, if a retailer wants to come to my community, they will play by my rules. In other words, certain facade requirements or things of that nature that really just is a turnoff to that retailer. If a retailer throughout that process gets the feeling that that community will be difficult to do business with moving forward, they're going to really reconsider that decision. It's all about speed to market for that retailer. The longer that process takes, the more it's impacting their bottom line, their ROI. So if they get that feeling, if that community is not going to be easy to do business with, most often they'll move elsewhere. That's the number one reason we've seen communities not be successful. It's very few that aren't successful, but absolutely there are some. You can't win every single one over 12 years. Those ones that have been not successful, or we've seen to where there's not enough opportunity, we've taken care of those clients.
Do you ever look into, with your program, past failures in a community and successes, you know, why businesses left at all, or is that not part of your?
It is. So part of on the front end, too, if there's been major retailers or significant retailers that have left that market, we identify who are those individuals, and then we try to understand what made them leave the market. The most common one we see a lot of times are lease renewals are up, and the individual wants to raise rates on that retailer, so they'll seek elsewhere. That's one of the most common factors that we see.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Alderman Wilhelm, then Alderman Mayor.
Well, Cody, thanks for that. That was very helpful. I think that, you know, the longer we wait as a community, the farther we're falling behind. And, you know, Southridge was at a point where it was kind of going down. And that probably would have been a better time for us to pick up. Now Southridge is picking up, and we're doing nothing. So we could completely lose our opportunity if we don't get going on this. We can sit back and wait. We can wait, like the mayor suggested, until we go through the hiring of all these consultants for this next possible TIF areas. Rhetorical question is a TIF district required to make use of your services?
It's not. We've seen, obviously, in certain markets, TIFs are widely used. In the past, they were widely used, obviously, in Illinois, California, places like that. We still see TIFs used, oftentimes from a funding standpoint or certain incentives, those kind of things. But we've seen many communities be very successful without the use of TIF districts.
So if we could get going now, get a jump start, start locating, making contacts by the time we get some incentives in place, that will be like just further help us along in what we're trying to do, I guess. That's how I see it. So, I guess.
I absolutely agree with that, and not simply from the fact of we truly do want to partner with Franklin, but at the same time, it's important to realize that retail recruitment, it's not an event. It's a process. It's something that takes time. It's not something that upon our first reach out and your first reach out that you're going to get engaged in that deep conversation. It's many conversations that happen. It's just like a sales process. You have to proactively and continually follow up with those retailers and stay on their radar. The longer you wait to do that, the more opportunity it gives other communities to get ahead of you and get ahead of that curve and essentially get a leg up on you. So the sooner you start with the market research and start implementing, the better off you are.
Alderwoman Mayer.
The stuff that you've done in Milwaukee, can you elaborate on that?
So that was years ago. But essentially it was doing the exact same type thing we're talking here. So helping them identify what specific retail categories were they really experiencing the most amount of leakage in, or what were those other ones maybe that they were already seeing surplus and they could continue to capitalize on. But then helping them effectively understand who are those right retailers that should be there, maybe that next tier, that next level retailer, I'll call it, and then how do they go out and proactively recruit those retailers.
Can you recall like exactly where that was?
Off the top of my head, I cannot.
Yes.
Still learning.
Sorry.
Alderman Mayer.
Mr. Mayor, we had a somewhat limited public comment period. I'm just curious. We have a lot of people in the audience, and I'm not exactly sure what items they're all here for, but we do have some heavy hitters. I'm just curious if anybody has anything to say on this topic from the audience. I would move to suspend regular whatever I have to allow her to speak.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Former Mayor Taylor. I get to say this to you now. Name and address for the record, please.
Tom Taylor, 7014 Elroy Court, Franklin, Wisconsin. Yeah, I'm here for this subject. I spoke about this before. I very much support the council looking at going with Buxton. I think that instead of trying to bring somebody up to speed who's brand new to the community, that doesn't know our very, very complex ordinances with natural resources features, it hasn't gone through all of the public hearings where the public has set the types of retail that they want and then the types of retail that they do not want. I think Buxton is the perfect fit for Franklin. Something, as you're well aware, Steve, not that many years ago, the biggest problem we had in Franklin was we had too much development. We had too many businesses wanting to come to Franklin. Well, the Germantown, Menominee Falls have experienced the same thing. We had a worldwide economic collapse. But just like Germantown and Menominee Falls, it's starting to come back. Single-family homes are starting to come back. Condominiums are starting to come back. And this is, you're in competition with those communities. You're in competition with Oak Creek. You're in competition with Greendale, just did a TIF district for that beautiful area that they have downtown. You have to get going, and you have to get going 2 or 3 years ago. And Buxton is ready to go. It's a perfect fit for this community. So I would highly recommend that you go.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Ken Skoronsky, 8642 South 116th Street. I agree with the mayor. We are pretty unison on what development should be in this community. We did have an economic collapse last couple of years, which hurt. We have to do things. We had Buxton in a presentation to us several years back. I think at least 6 years back, that was in front of the EDC. We have a lot of opportunity, but in essence, we're really behind the wheel. We should have been doing things a few more years, but things didn't work out. But we have to develop. There's plenty of places to go. You have to have the infrastructure for the companies to come in, and we have to be much more congenial regarding our building codes and things. We have a lot of restrictions on the 27th Street, which I think should be looked at by this council. Be more proactive within bringing these companies in, and we have a great opportunity. We have a lot of land, and I think we can do very well. Thank you.
Okay. Can we now have a motion to go back into regular business? Now
so moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Again, I'm going to tell you that I think you ought to hold off on this tonight. You owe to your constituents to not spend $150,000 without looking at whatever else is out there. I've been mischaracterized already this evening about wanting to delay. I do not want to delay. I want to do it properly. And one day, it's not going to work yet. We've heard from Buxton. Is there anybody else that can do this? Okay. Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Well, I did do some research on this, and I found Buxton to be very qualified and a great fit, and their reputation was good. I've called a couple communities, the one that just recently hired them, and already is very happy with their services. I walked through a couple programs, one that Ms. Liberta suggested to me. I took lots of notes on that. I didn't see that we would get the detail or the assistance. It's pretty much, here's the data, go for it on your own. Here we get help, we get the initial contact, we get the help at the seminars. The other company, they could tell me demographically who might come there. They couldn't tell me if any of those businesses were successful that follow those demographics. They also were not consumer-based. So, you know, they may locate in a certain area with a certain population but a certain age group, but are those the people in Franklin that are actually purchasing from them? And Buxton has that information. They have credit card data. They have more information than any of the other places that I've researched. And I also like the fact that they're not attached with a broker. They're independent. Like you said, they're not going to be massaging the data to make areas work for them. It's not like we're just waiting one night. They've been before us before. The Economic Development Commission has looked at this. They've recommended them. In fact, Cody has been before us. So he talked about having communities that are easy to work with. If we have to have an item come before this council 4 to 6 times, every time we're going to make a decision, we're not going to be that community that Cody talked about.
I appreciate the lecture from both former elected officials and you. There's not a single person in this room, not one, who's done as much for economic development as me. So,
point of order, Mayor.
Please don't lecture.
I am not lecturing. I'm giving my point of view. I'm sorry if you take it as lecturing, but I think I'm making some valid points, and I don't appreciate it. You know, if you want to cut me off and have me lose my train of thought, I think that's rude. And I've been very professional. I've tried to do what I thought was right for this community. I've done the research. I've spent hours of my time outside of this council chambers trying to get something going for the community. You have an economic development committee that's sitting there twiddling its thumbs, waiting to do something. They could take this data and run with it and have something going. This is not dependent on our action tomorrow. We should be doing this anyway. We should be doing this for the businesses that are there that need our help, the empty buildings that are up there. And I guess if you You have the EDC. You're not going to put people on there. You're not going to give them any tools, and you're certainly not going to give them any funding. Communities that are serious about economic development don't operate in that manner. So I am very interested in moving forward with getting going on economic development, especially the retail. I've heard it for many years. Where's the restaurants? Where's the places we can go? Why can't we spend our money in Franklin? Why can't we get anything going? And this is an opportunity, and I think we should at least give it a try. The contract has an out. If it's not successful, it has an out. And I am ready to make that motion. I'm going to make a motion to adopt a resolution authorizing certain officials to execute an agreement with Buxton Company to provide community retail economic development needs and satisfaction, study, recruiting, and retention professional consulting services with costs to come from the restricted contingency portion of the contingency appropriation, and for staff to prepare the budget expenditure authorization needed.
And what is the amount on this?
It's $50,000 for the first year reevaluation, and $50,000 for the next 2 years. It's a 3 year.
Okay. I remind everybody that on tomorrow evening's agenda, the same exact item is on tomorrow night's agenda. Is there a support for that motion?
Second.
Any discussion? Alderman Mayor.
I do have a question and just kind of a clarification from you, Mr. Mayor. How exactly this fits in with tomorrow's decision?
There's additional information that you'll get tomorrow that will relate to the services offered by Buxton and others so that you can make a complete and informed decision rather than a decision based on a presentation of one. It's a service to your constituents to wait one day.
I guess I just need a clarification as to the people that we'd be talking about tomorrow. How do they compare to what Buxton can do for us in a retail area?
Mr. Spencer.
The Grave proposals and the detail in their contract for a potential retail area and the potential mixed use area contains economic development services where they do markets and the like, which is not recommended by staff on the action sheet.
This isn't going to be information from like the Tickner report or something where it's just like demographics and stuff. Is it going to be truly useful information?
Current market data study information.
And again, we're talking 24 hours. If in 24 hours you hear the presentation, which I don't think is totally unreasonable. Mr. Omeis, I think that's totally unreasonable. Then go ahead with the contract. But until you hear what's available out there, you don't know what you're buying. And it's $50,000. $50,000. We brought up the Tickner report. Do you know how many meetings we went through to justify that? And we get two from Buxton and nobody else. There was a selection committee for that package that met, it must have been 7 weekends, and interviewed each one before we issued it. I appreciate Buxton. I do know of them. I respect them. They no doubt will do a good job. But until we do our due diligence, and it takes 24 hours, I think you're all walking on eggshells. Alderman Willow.
Well, I recall some marketing efforts where we didn't have any problem spending $297,000 on marketing a certain particular name for an area. That was okay to spend that kind of money, but when we're talking about getting retail going for our city, It's always a big drag, and I can see that we're going to be that difficult community right from the get-go. This is a question for whoever can answer it. If we move forward with every single thing on the agenda tomorrow, with the exception of Buxton, who's on the end, how long is it going to take for all of that data to be gathered? When are we expecting for that to happen? Is it going to take a week? Is it going to take 2 weeks? Because I had discussions with the city attorney that he was talking, we're not talking about until 2015. We want to wait until 2015. I'm going to withdraw my motion. But every time we delay this, we're setting Franklin back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That is cooperation. All I'm asking is 24 hours. And tomorrow evening, we make the same motion, we vote on it, off we go. To answer your question, tomorrow evening, should this motion be made and passed, I see no reason why. Thank you, Paul. I see no reason that this couldn't be executed Thursday, even though the city attorney needs to look at the contract, and we move forward. There's no reason for that. Alderwoman Welland.
Well, I hope this time when the council gives direction for staff to go look at a contract, we actually come back with a contract. I had to ask Cody for the information, for the detailed information, which was asked by this council. So if there is a contract, city contract, boilerplate language, I would expect that that would come with the motion and not be held up and not be delayed in, getting going.
Just one quick point I want to make. We hear about where are the restaurants all the time, and we do want more restaurants, and we do want more retail. But if you haven't been to the Hideaway lately, you don't know what you're missing. If you haven't been to Crossroads Pizza, we've got the best pizza in the world at Crossroads. St. Martin's Inn is a world-class restaurant, and Hanley's is the best bar and grill around. We do have some restaurants. We need to take our business there. We do have restaurants. Thank you. Patronize them. We do have some restaurants here. We need more, but we do have some great ones here. Thank you.
The original motion has been withdrawn. Any other action on this item? Mr. City.
Withdrawn. Second. Depending on further review for tomorrow night, I will withdraw my second.
Thank you. Mr. City Attorney.
And technically, once a motion is made and seconded, it belongs to the governing body. An objection, current status, assuming that it's withdrawn is fine.
Any objection?
No.
Okay.
I do apologize for technical difficulties, but I thank you for allowing me time tonight and consider it an honor to be here and hope
to touch on Wednesday, Kristen or me or someone.
Have a great evening.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark, for your efforts too to try and resolve the issue.
Since we're thanking, thank you, Kristen, for withdrawing your motion. I appreciate it. Deal with this. Okay, item two, recommendation from the Board of Health to amend the municipal code to add fines of $50 for non-compliance of a written order. Mr. Woodward.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the Town Council. The next three items on the agenda are generated by the Health Department with the Board of Health preview. The first two are amendments to city ordinance and it's print form, and the third is authorization to sign the contracts for the next five-year period as agents for inspection purposes here in Franklin. So item G2 is a request to amend current ordinance chapter 138 that would allow the city sanitarian to issue a $50 fine for non-compliance with a written order. We do have a number of tools in our kit to do enforcement, but this is an intermediate or first step that we seek the issuance of a small monetary fine. This would be used primarily for recurrent, chronic, and uncorrected written violations by licensed establishments, the less critical or the business practices that just never seem to get fixed while we're trying to get compliance with business owners. And we're not looking to write lots of fines. That hasn't been our pattern. Our pattern has been to cooperate and coordinate services with our business establishments here in Franklin, but it could help us in terms of getting compliance and better business practices.
Is there action?
Move to approve.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Alderman Whelan.
Bill, how does this apply to the percent of state fees and total collected funds that are in the contract for reimbursements for the state and health department?
A fine would not have the 10% payment to the state, so the full $50 would be retained by the city. And as a fine itself, in comparison to fines offered in surrounding communities or southeastern Wisconsin, this is a bare bones low fine.
So there's already a reinspection fee as well.
There is
so
a reinspection
and
fee.
They pay that fee as well.
Well, the reinspection fee is by definition third time Angie would go for the same offense, and at that point there would be a reinspection fee because it's already entailed three separate inspections. And yes, they are much higher, as high as $250 for some establishments.
Okay, so this would take the place of, or they would still have that and a reinspection fee. So you'd be finding them and giving them a reinspection fee.
Only a reinspection fee would be issued after three violations for the same offense. So the likelihood of this fine being issued singularly and not involve a reinspection fee is strong. And these, again, are for lesser offenses.
So how are you going to set that based on, is there a policy where you're going to say it's three times, it's five times, for this person it's seven? How are you going to determine and set that?
The reinspection fee is our tool that's used for critical items, three inspections within a short period of time for a critical item that hasn't been corrected. They get 3 days, and then if I have to come back in another day or two, then that's a reinspection fee is assessed because the critical item hasn't been changed. What we're looking for is a good retail practice, non-critical item that's over three longer term inspections that hasn't been corrected. So there are two different categories of violations that they apply to.
Are non-critical health related?
They're in the Wisconsin Food Code, but they are not directly related to immediate public health. They're good retail practices, as in building maintenance issues, equipment.
Restroom doors that work, grout, pets on facility, ventilation issues, things that should be corrected, but Angie's not going to be going back except for routine inspection purposes and noting them repetitiously, chronically, and recurring.
And then once you get them noted, though, there's a process?
Yes, the first process is it's been documented each time
right.
in their inspection, and there comes a point where you say enough is enough.
Well, I guess my concern is this. We just got done talking about being the community that's accepting and easy to work with. And this doesn't sound like one of those things that if it's not a critical health issue and we have a process in place, we're just putting another fee and a fine on top of a fee and a fine they already are going to have to pay. So I guess I'm wondering if it's necessary.
Both wouldn't be assessed in the same situation. They're for two separate situations. This is for a recurring, non-critical item that we're asking. Just as mainly an attention getter, you're not listening. I've gone over this three times. Now I need your attention.
Would that apply to the one we had on the licensing committee tonight?
Most likely not, because that was not a written violation. What is action?
And how, I guess, I'm not understanding how we know you're going to use your judgment, because there's no written policy on this judgment. So it's basically going to be your judgment alone on that, and we can't go back and say, well, you know, they didn't really follow this, and, you know, it was a little bit this way with this person, but with this person it was that way. And it doesn't lead to very fairness in the fact that there's no step-by-step process. It's just kind of a judgment. is an extra fee. So that's my concern.
It is discretionary. It's coming from a department that has always been slow to issue fines, very slow for suspension, glacial when it comes to revocation. We're not a fining group. We tend to work very cooperatively with our businesses. The frequency is based on the words recurrent, chronic, or uncorrected.
Alderman Mayor.
This has got nothing to do with us being open to business or not. They've been warned, in writing. If they can't follow the rules and that's their problem, let's just move forward with this. It's a good idea.
Alderwoman Evans.
Well, exactly what Alderman Mayor just said. We have a process, which is you do the three inspections, and then if you don't follow this process, you get a citation, which, from what I understand from our Board of Health meeting, we're not in the habit of issuing citations. Is that correct? You haven't had to do that
very rarely.
So as we do with zoning issues, you issue a letter of you have 14 days to fix your violation, and or you'll get a citation. Imposing a fee like this for $50 when you're already getting a reinspection fee that's higher, I don't see that that's going to take care of the problem. And they're signing this saying they'll comply. If they're not complying, this is pointless to me. And some of these good retail practices down here, you're saying that they're going to deal with building issues, but some of these do deal with food. And we have high standards for our buildings in Franklin, and I want to have high standards for our health and safety inside the buildings. So I'm not in favor of this. And one last thing, during our Board of Health meeting, we talked about, it was presented that the fees would be between 50 and 200, and now I see it came at 50, not 50 and 200. You said it would be discretionary.
Yes.
Well, that's fine, but it was mentioned that something like the grout on the floor, you might go back with a $150 fee, and that you've had trouble with that grout issue, and that would take care of it. I think if someone isn't complying, we need to take care of it with a warning. And we do have a license committee. We handled one tonight, and they can come to the license committee. Thank you.
Well, it's my understanding that they're trying to put in place another step before you would have to go to citation, which citation would be very unfriendly to business. So if you're going to give them a $50 fine, I think that a warning to come before the license committee is warranted for sure. But I think what they're trying to do is avoid going that next step to citation and charging them so much on things that may not be as critical. I still think some of the stuff is,
it's important.
It's not critical, it's kind of gross. So please, do what you need to do. So I think a $50 fee, could be warranted. Maybe a warning before that to say we're going to charge you $50 if you don't get on board. And I'm not for charging companies, but I'm also for employees washing their hands before they go back to work. And I would probably approve something like this with, maybe a warning letter before that.
Well, or two inspections that I already said this is a recurring chronic problem at your business.
And I do bring to their attention, this has been an issue in the past. This is an issue again today. We need to address this before the next time that I come back. That type of situation.
All right, let me try to help this along. Because there isn't an ordinance change in the book ready to go, the motion would be to direct staff to return with the ordinance change as outlined in the council action. So we don't have an ordinance to approve. You want to send it to staff, have them write up the ordinance, and then think about it, and then vote on it, that would be appropriate. Alderman Thander first.
Yeah, Bill, I just wanted to make sure, are we trying to become more consistent with other communities in the state in putting this step into our process?
Sanitarians throughout the state, and in particular the Southeast region, have these tools, these citation and fine authorities.
Okay.
And our numbers, this is not out of whack with other communities.
As I'm hearing, do we just lack a protocol or a best practice procedure? Or is there something that is written that you'll be able to follow that serves as some type of a guideline?
Oh, I'm sure we can come up with the procedure for when a fine is issued. Not difficult.
The state sets a best practice model. As agents of the state, we should be following their best practice model. It's not one-to-one because we're unique in that we do more frequent inspections and we are in the business. But there is a model.
I guess I'd like to see this go back to staff and come back with some type of procedure that outlines we're going to go from this warning to this step to this, and then we're going to send a letter, and then we're going to have come in the licensing committee and lay those steps out so we can understand the process, so other people, the businesses, can understand the process as well. Make that motion to
let me ask the Alderman Mayor your motion, or not appropriate, please.
Well,
not appropriate.
His motion was to I believe adopt the ordinance, but there is no ordinance, so what his motion really is to direct the city attorney to prepare an ordinance to amend a section of the municipal code.
Yeah, I stand by that motion. They're given it in writing. They're given the warning in writing. They're told exactly what they need to approve. If they can't wake up and do what they've got to do, then they should be slapped with a little bit of a teeth in the code. So, yes, whatever.
Okay, the motion is to direct the city attorney and the health officer to come back with a proposed change to 138-28, as well as include a flowchart of how the ordinance works. Is that your motion, Mr.
Sure. Alderman?
And who was the second? Alderman Schmidt?
I don't
know. Mr. Dandry. Alderman Dandry.
Yes, that's okay.
All right, Mr. City Attorney.
Just a question for the public health officer. When I read this in the agenda packet, the fine equals citation, and the discussion I'm hearing this evening is that somehow private person or business can be fined without issuing a citation.
From time to time, we have reinspection fines in the code without a citation. The citation is going to bring with it the court costs, which is going to add an additional $123, $124 to the fine. And this does not, on our end, does not require a court appearance or the involvement in the court system or the assistance in
signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
Excuse me, Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Devona. I'm clarifying the motion is going back to staff to come back.
Correct. Correct.
Yes.
It's the rubber ball motion.
Alderman Evans.
No.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Was that a no?
Aye.
So the vote is 5-1. Motion passes. We have similar circumstance with this with item G3, a recommended change in the chapter. Is there a motion to refer this back to staff for appropriate ordinance revision language?
Sure.
Second.
Any discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G4, agency agreement with the Department of Health and Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection and Renewal 5-year contract. Mr. Walker.
The state has informed me that we've been agents now for 5 years. We've passed all their evaluations, reviews. They're very satisfied with our work and our reports. And they've reminded me that a new 5-year term of agreement or agreements are due with the respective departments. They're boilerplate contracts, non-negotiable. There's no surprises here. There's nothing we're not currently doing. Again, reviewed by the Board of Health and recommended unanimously for approval for me to authorize the contracts.
Is there a motion to direct the Director of Human Health and Human Services to sign the contract with the agency?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signal.
Aye.
Excuse me. Alderman Wilhelm.
In the contract, it talks about the local agent may conduct an analysis of its laboratory. Laboratories capable? Are you doing that? Any laboratory analysis?
We do not. Some agents do not have labs. Therefore, we use either the City of Milwaukee Public Health Laboratory or, more likely, the State Lab of Hygiene and Medicine.
Okay. So the next thing says that if we do it, we have to pay for it. So I just want to make sure we're going to. Okay, thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G5, results.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And City Secretary. Results of a survey of property owners abutting West St. Martin's Road from Iowa 100 to Forest Home Avenue, Mr. City Engineer.
I would love to tell you I know a lot about this, but Ron's been bringing me up to speed. I think he's more appropriate to give you the full explanation.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Mayor, Council. The extension of water on St. Martin's from Chapel Hill to Forest Home is part of the facility plan, water facility plan. It's important to the city's water system on the west side. In 2016, Milwaukee County is proposing to reconstruct St. Martin's. The Water Commission, I believe, and yourself thought it was important to find out if the position of the residents, the abutting residents along St. Martin's. It's timely that now would be the time to put in the water prior to the reconstruction of the road. 45 letters were sent out to the property owners abutting St. Martin's, and a real strong response. Over 73% of the abutting property owners responded in opposition, as against the extension of water, 29 out of 33. And that was the response of that survey, strongly in opposition at the present time.
By the way, our fours and against looks pretty much the same in black and white.
Oh, well, we did make a
color. I didn't. I'm not voting. Is there action regarding this item? Alderman Mayor.
Move to place on file.
Second.
All those in favor? Any discussion of the motion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. Go home. No water for you. Item G6, an ordinance to amend 207-16 of the Municipal Code, delinquent sewer and water bills pursuant to stats 6608909-73. And I note that we have an ordinance. Mr. City Engineer. Okay. Mr. Assistant City Engineer.
Yes, thank you, Ken. The procedure has been that notification is given to users, either sewer or water, that they have a delinquent bill. 30 days are required. Those notices are sent out on October 15th. Then they have until November 15th to respond. Presently, the ordinance talks as November 30th, which is too late to then roll over or place the delinquent bill on the tax bill. So we're suggesting...
Former Mr. Mayor? Thanks.
Well, just that we need to change the date from the 30th, which is too late to put it on the tax bill, to the 16th. And it's just a change of that date to better accommodate the process.
Is there a motion regarding this matter?
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Let the record reflect that the Alderman Mayor has left his seat. Any discussion of this matter?
Yeah, I have one question.
Alderman Evans.
Thank you. One question, please. How did we get? Do you know how we got the November 30th date? Because I can't see anything in any statute or anything.
It's probably a historical. Not sure how the 30th was listed or why it was, but it's improper. We believe, given the process that we feel we need to go through. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G7. There is a new G7 sheet at your places, I believe. An ordinance to amend to rename Article 11, Chapter 11. One second, I'll give you mine. It's just a cover sheet. Relating to weapons, hunting, and trapping, and to create 18379. Alderwoman Evans.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I brought this ordinance forward because I feel Franklin citizens should be able to recreate outdoors. They should feel secure in knowing that their children and pets can be safe in city parks and on city property from hidden traps or any trapping. In my area near Franklin Woods Park, a fox was seen running from the woods with a spring trap on its leg, and residents attempted to catch the fox. They could not, and it was in the neighborhood behind a pool, and it was a dangerous situation. They never were able to catch the fox. So that's also, you know, inhumane for animals. So I make a motion to approve to adopt an ordinance to rename Article XXI of Chapter 183 of the Municipal Code to Weapons, Hunting, and Trapping, and to create 18379 of the Municipal Code, Trapping of Animals, pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 29.038 sub 2 sub B regarding regulation of wild animals.
Support for that?
Second.
How would that apply to, this is just strictly city parks is how I read it. Would it apply to county parks as well? But it's in the city of Franklin.
Mr. City Attorney.
Milwaukee County Ordinances, Chapter 47, Parks and Parkways, Section 4705. Firearms and fireworks, hunting with bow and arrow, trapping. No person shall carry, fire, discharge any gun, pistol, or firearm, nor any rocket, torpedo, or other fireworks of any description, nor shall any person engage in trapping within any park or parkway without a written permit from the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Culture.
Well, it affects sand traps, though.
Or torpedoes.
So, what was the answer to my question?
You can get a permit, but it's
not permitted. So, like the Franklin State Natural Area,
that's
what I'm trying to ask.
That's subject to state statutes and administrative regulations, and is in effect exempt from this provision, as is set forth under subsection 3 of the proposed.
Well, the Muskego Lake area is what I'm talking about. The natural area. Franklin's Savannah State. We don't even know that we have a state natural designation area in our city. This is Suzanne's backyard.
I do.
We don't need to know. Park area that we know.
Well, I think you should.
All right. So there's been a motion made and seconded. Any other discussion?
The answer was for that particular area was?
Not owned or leased by the city, not city parkland that wouldn't be covered by this ordinance.
Is that not under DNR regulations then?
I'm understanding that's a mapped area on private property.
It's not private, it's the public.
Oh. Well, let's do it this way.
I mean, I'm fine with it. I just want to know what it applies to. I think it's fine. I agree with Alderman Ellen's assessment about safety in the parks. I just want to make sure I know when people call me up and say, can I do this here? I have an answer to their question. I know the clear answer. That's all.
Any other discussion?
I don't know if the fox approves this.
What was the fox thing?
All those in favor, Alderman?
Are you saying that this isn't duplication now? This is not
the city can't regulate state property.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
Or county.
Well, they can't regulate their own property. Sorry.
That's fine.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G8. An ordinance to create Chapter 170 of the Municipal Code relating to escort services and massage therapists. Alderwoman Evans.
Yes, thank you. One of the privileges that we have is being able to do ride-alongs with our police force. And as I was on one of my ride-alongs, it was brought to my attention that it would help our law enforcement in their fight with the prevention of prostitution and other crimes associated with it if we were to have an ordinance regarding escort services and massage parlors. And I was informed that there are women doing this sort of activity that are being used and this is a quote a little bit out of context, by their pimps, and not doing this sort of activity voluntarily at times. And I'd like to call Chief Oliva, if I may, up to the table to add any comment he may have on this to help me out here.
Chief? And all the women have been still. You're moving slow. Are you a little sore?
He needs a massage.
That was cheap.
No, I mean, this is not an epidemic in the city of Franklin. There are things that do occur, and the ordinance would, I think, be more of a preemptive type of ordinance that we could use in some limited cases to address situations that occur that we are unable to enforce a strict prostitution-related charge. This might help to dissuade certain people from coming in and trying to apply an escort-type service at our motels and other areas. So, I support the ordinance. It's obviously, if you look at it, it's heavily on licensing, and it's really meant to be a discouragement from anybody to apply for an escort license. I don't know of any illegitimate person or business that would entertain the thought of applying for a license because obviously it's discouraged to have this type of business come to our city. So in that sense, I support it. It would be like a preemptive type ordinance.
Alderman Evans still has the floor, then Alderman Wilhelm, then Alderman Schmidt, then Alderman Mayor.
Thank you. Is it not true that while it may be difficult to find out if someone is participating in prostitution, that if we did pass this type of ordinance, that once you opened a door, you know, you could then ask if you have, do you have a license for what you're doing here? So this could aid in that way. I don't know how many licenses we may get for this, but this is, you're able to ask then, do you have a license for this type of activity that's going on here if you see something going
right
on?
Right, so it's a tool.
It is the tool.
Yeah, it's a tool if you couldn't prove prostitution. I guess in a theoretical way, a person that's alleged to be conducting that type of activity would most likely deny it, and in most cases might say, I'm just escorting this person, or I'm acting as an escort. Because there is a lot of that. There's a lot of online escort services that operate in our area. And as a way to avoid the appearance of prostitution-related activities, so if a person responds, I'm just acting as an escort, the ordinance could be used as a tool to say, well, where's your permit, where's your license, you don't have one. We could fine that person for not having an escort license. So again, it's a tool that could be used. I don't think it's going to be used a lot, but it has potential to discourage people from applying an escort service in our city.
Thank you. My last comment is the Wisconsin Department of Justice indicates that human trafficking and drug distribution is often starts under the guise of massage parlors, escort services, bars and strip clubs, and adult bookstores. So, and there is human trafficking going on in all four corners of the state of Wisconsin. Thank you.
I note for Robert in the Rules Board, we don't have a motion. All of them welcome, so
I support the good work that Evan has done. I do have a couple concerns, and I would ask that she might consider just holding it over so the city attorney could look at one thing to make it possibly even a better and stronger ordinance for her to bring forward. When I was involved, police chief can remember that when we did the 27th Street Motel ordinance and requiring them to have their license, and there was a big uproar about not notifying the people, and oh, it's going to cause all these problems, and we had to send letters to everyone. And I guess I'm not asking to go to that extent on that, but there is a notification period for the what I call legitimate massage therapists. And what I'd rather see is the escort service section be its own separate chapter, followed by the massage therapist section. With the same, you could have the same language. I just think that there are legitimate massage therapists that work for helping people with managing chronic pain, and they too want escort services to be shut down because it hurts them and gives them a bad name. And I think that linking the massage therapist in the same sentence sort of insinuates that, you know, all massage therapist type activities are related to escort services. And I just think it's it can be a little insulting to that professional service. But I, all in all, I think it's a very good, and I think it's a great way. One of the ones that came to mind is, in the past I've had issues with pain, and I sought out Wheaton Franciscan's massage services, and I, you know, the Wheatons, have they ever come in and follow it or something with escort services? I'm not sure it's quite the appropriate place to put them. So it would be a pretty minor change to that, to just make it its kind of separate category. And then in I had one other concern on page 85. Well, right now under section 17, it actually is mislabeled 16, and then 18 is labeled 17. So there's a numbering issue that also needs to be cleaned up on that. But this is how the massage section reads. As a condition of the certificate, the person holding the certificate must permit city employees without notice to inspect the premises at any time during business hours. So you picture yourself, you've had a rough day, you're really in pain, you go in there, you're on the massage table, and any city employee can come in while you're on the table, and you know you're paying for the service, and you thought you were going to be relaxed, and so it's, I guess, in addition to renumbering, breaking that out, I would also like city employees defined to be inspection or key law enforcement agencies. I would be more comfortable if it was a law enforcement agency doing the inspection than, you know, having any of like Mark Roberta coming in as a city employee or Mayor Olson. So could we?
Not in a million years.
Maybe just clean up that. And then I think it should be ready to go, and I appreciate the good work that's been done here. So that's my suggestion. I guess I could make the motion to just have the city attorney bring it back with cleaning up the suggested corrections on that.
Is there support from the table?
I'll make a motion to the table.
You're going to second the motion.
I'll second it.
Sure. All right. On the motion to Mr. City Attorney.
Only if the concern about numbering is because section spelled out 17 is immediately followed by section 170-16. That's proper number.
Okay. Alderman Schmidt, then Alderman Evans.
Chief Oliva, how many incidents have you been privy to where this, where you've come into issues resolving prostitution or massage therapists in the time that you've been police chief?
You have no actionable information taken on massage therapists. We've had several incidents of provable acts of prostitution.
If they are legitimate massage therapists, then they already would have a license, correct? So I don't know. I just don't know how much we're achieving here by going into this at this depth. Generally, you're using your own discretion as to when there is a trafficking of prostitution.
Yeah, there's ways to investigate those types of complaints, but it's very difficult because you don't have a complainant.
So by changing this ordinance, does that give you, does that clarify it for you when you go into it, answer a call?
As far as Alderman Wilhelm's motion or request?
Well, regarding if there's someone that's claiming...
What kind of information are you looking for here, Doug?
I think what the Alderman was getting at, which I agree, is that I think, generally speaking, most escort services are more likely to be illegitimate fronts for prostitution, and there are very few legitimate escort services out there just doing benign escorting, where majority of massage parlors, salons are legitimate, and very small portion of massage therapists are illegitimate. So by linking the massage therapists or majority legitimate businesses with an ordinance that covers mainly illegitimate businesses, there's an inference that maybe you don't want to have.
Thank you, Vince.
Well, let's all be reminded that Alderwoman Evans is responding appropriately to a request that she had from a line officer in the city, and she worked for the police chief, so let's just remember that. Alderwoman Evans.
I appreciate Alderwoman Wilhelm's comments, and I just want to express that basically the same ordinance as written, which was recently October 29th approved in Maguanago, is also the same ordinance in Oak Creek, Pleasant Prairie, Muskego, Fitchburg, Wausau, Green Bay, La Crosse, Brookfield, the town of Brookfield, New Berlin, Appleton, Grand Chute, Eau Claire, Milwaukee, and Madison, and Beaver Dam is even considering totally banning escort services altogether. And I'm just as the you know, the health department does inspections as they need to, I don't believe they would. I mean, I'm just assuming they're not going to walk in on someone having a massage. I think that would be private, but the kind of massage business is, I mean, if you have a license, you've got a license, but there's an article from My Community Now, not by John, Oak Creek police arrest a woman for providing escort services without a license. A woman was arrested. Officers and a canine responded to a hotel. Officers found the woman had a massage table set up in her room and there was a man present. They questioned the woman about the table and she told the police she was charging $80 for a massage in the hotel. She also stated that some of the subjects asked for sexual favors, but she only charges for the massage and never does any sexual favors for her clients. The canine officer searched the room, revealing that the woman also had several needles, glass pipes, used to smoke crack cocaine, and some other plastic bags with residue concealed in a makeup bag. So, I mean, it just shows that. So she got cited for not having a license, and then they were able to find drugs. So, I mean, I think this is a good ordinance. So, thank you.
All the women.
Well, I think that obviously that person wasn't a massage therapist.
Well, depends. That's,
and not legitimate. And I do have to agree. My sister is a massage therapist. She's very good. She has her own business. And if she was in the city of Franklin and had to deal with something that is linking her to an escort service, in effect, It is very, I don't know. I would appreciate it if, it, I mean, even if you just took it out and said massage parlor, because massage therapists don't use massage parlor as their thing. They are legitimate, hardworking people, and that can be taken out at least. Because I do understand that you have things like that, that massage masseuses are not technically legit. So if we can at least change the wording and not just massage therapists do their work and masseuses do their work. So we can just take that out, change it up.
Okay, the motion's been to table. The intention of the motion is to separate out and distinguish massage therapists from the rest of the ne'er-do-wells. Any other discussion on that motion? Seeing none, I'm not looking around. All those in favor of the table signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Work through all the women have it on this. Item G9, let's try to get through this. Recommendation and adoption of a post-debit issuance compliance policy. Mr. Rotzenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's a tough act to follow.
Well, of all the people in the city, you're the guy.
Hey, just, Mr. Mayor, I just want to introduce you. I was talking to former Mayor Al Richards, who is now your constituent and lives in the city of Franklin. So,
well, Mr. Mayor.
Al on his way.
Actually, residents of District 2 as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Mr. Rotzenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The city, if you will recall, is contemplating a debt offering early in December. And the city does not currently have a post-debt issuance compliance policy. This is coming before you in that the city's bond council is recommending that the city adopt such a policy in that one of the closing elements of the bond sale will be a filing with the Internal Revenue Service. And
the record reflected Alderman Mayer has left the seat. Thank you, Paul.
that filing with the Internal Revenue Service will note whether or not the city has a policy. And we understand from professional organizations that the IRS is using this particular form to identify issuers of public debt for further scrutiny on their practices and policies around the management of that debt issuance. So Bond Council has drafted this policy for the city, and the Finance Committee reviewed it at its recent meeting and recommends its adoption.
Alderman Mayer has returned. Alderman Dandria.
I'll make a motion to adopt Resolution 2014, adopting post-debit or debit issuance debt. Compliance debt. Policy or debt. Issuance compliance policy dated November 3rd, 2014.
Second. Discussion? Wow. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G10, September quarterly financial report. Highlights, Mr. Ratzenberg. Or lowlights, but we never have any of those.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would remind the Common Council that these statements were reviewed at the recent Finance Committee meeting and recommended for acceptance and placement on file. The city's finances continue to be rather strong. There will likely be some potential budget modifications as we close out the year to deal with some unanticipated expenditures that are occurring. But generally speaking, the city's finances are headed towards completion of the year with a relatively small surplus.
Relative to the past.
Relative to the most recent past.
Motion to place on file.
Second.
It's okay. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item G11, authorized purchase budget and capital items to complete a network backup system plan. Mr. Roberto.
The details are set forth in the council action sheet. Simply because the total was as much as it was, $30,000 for the full strategy, I expected that reasonable to bring it to your attention before committing the resources. But this puts the appropriate backup plan in place. In short order, it was discussed at the Technology Commission, and it's consistent with the approved.
Alderman Mayer.
Move to approve.
Second. Any discussion? Alderman Evans.
Yeah, I have two questions, Mr. Liberta. The backup exec, did we try the 2014 update at all or consider doing that to alleviate the problems?
In the sense that Heartland Business System has experience with a number of their customers and the information across the internet from other users, and Backup Exec 2014 hasn't been having the success that we had with earlier versions. I think the problem stems from the fact that we've become more and more virtualized, and it was written in a time when there was less virtualization of machines. Whereas Veeam is having, for the last number of years, is having tremendous success working in a virtualized environment, which we've largely moved to for cost-saving measures in the last 5 or 6 years. So I think that expansion of the virtualization mixed with the changes that Backup Exec had caused them to not work, and their 2014 hasn't been tremendously successful.
Thank you. And then with the DPW, it says in here that they back up to disks. Is that true? Not tape at all, but you're talking.
No. Actually, their backup will be to removable 1 terabyte hard drives. That will relocate. So that's what the 240 is. When we had some problems earlier, we bought one to get them moving. They don't have an autoloader. Or a separate disk driver to use, but given the size of their network, they're being isolated.
It solves everything except I know that they're having some issues with their GasBoy software, and so there may be something coming back to you in the future to deal with their gas system, and that may require some different backup issues. But for them, it's the $240 is a very short, low price for a quick solution to ensure that their data is backed up.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, because it's so new, the backup exec, whose idea was it to purchase that?
Well, backup exec isn't new. Backup exec we've used for years and very successfully, and it had success in the industry until the 2012 version, and we've been struggling with it since then. The one
that was newer is
Veeam.
So that one's the one you kept updating, that one, and the 2012 just kind of...
Yeah, the 2012 version hasn't worked well. Our backups have repeatedly failed. We repeatedly had to watch it and rebuild it and try and make sure they work. Luckily, it hasn't. We haven't had any significant problems with it. We haven't had a backup need that we haven't been able to fill from one tape or another. But, you know, backing networks up is all about risk management, and we've avoided it, but too many potential problems and too much staff time fixing something that should be routine.
So you had prior versions of backup exec?
That worked very well, yes.
Okay.
Having been on the technology commission for 8 million years, I will tell you, this was probably, I can guess, a very exciting conversation at the committee level. These guys get this stuff, and I'm sure they ran.
Well, and the important thing that out of everything I wrote here, the piece that they would want you to take note of is that this solves our immediate needs of having backups in place, but it doesn't solve those long-term needs of business continuity and disaster recovery, which are different issues. But I think we're looking for that to be one of those strategies and expectations that will take a little time to develop because it's more costly. And your new IT manager and director, if it passes in your budget ultimately, will probably be charged with having that as one of his first acts.
Orders. Motion on the floor. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Good night, Lynn. Got some unpacking to do. Item H1, miscellaneous licenses. Mr. Alderman Dandrea. And Alderman Mayor.
Make a motion to approve the following licenses. Eric Sedbeck, Eric Spielberg appeared on behalf of the organization for food establishment license. That was for discussion only. Quinn Applin, operator new, approved. Isaac Kikorian, operator new, approved. Shelby Muth, operator new, approved. And Jordan Plate, new operator. Approved subject to signature and notary seals. And notary seal.
Second.
And Alderman Mayor has returned. Is this a new restaurant we have? Not yet. No?
No.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Vouchers and payroll. I-1.
Mr. Mayor. Just want to remind the council and the mayor that there is a revised council action sheet before you. I wanted to make sure that the group was working off of the revised sheet. Thank you,
checking up on me? Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Question about Paul. The weekly services taking place on Rawson Avenue, are we getting reimbursed for that? Or are we just paying?
I'm sorry, you said something about Rawson Avenue, and I didn't hear what you said.
It's the service contract. Basically,
it's
the landscape maintenance along
Rawson. I'm unfamiliar
with
that.
154229. It's on page 6.
If that's the, I think it's KTI or something.
Yeah,
that's paid for through the development agreement for the developer of the Sendix. I believe that is built out.
Yeah. It actually goes down the whole area.
Yeah.
So and Andy's was part of that too. Now Quick Trip took it over. Do they know that they're obligated for the Andy's share?
The Andy's piece, I don't believe, is currently being built, just the Western.
Andy's was paid?
They're supposed to.
Well, that's why I'm wondering. I see it in here. I don't know how the reimbursement, I don't know if Quick Trip's been notified of it. So I'm calling it to your attention, so you might want to make sure we don't get stuck with those costs. And it gets taken care of.
Well, I can give you back.
Thank you. We'll look into it and get back to you.
The motion to reading that general checking account city vouchers in the range of 154126 through 154294, the amount of $2,068,349.08, dated October 17th.
So moved.
Second.
And now what do we do? All those in favor signify. I'm sorry, Madam Clerk, roll call.
Alderwoman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderwoman Allen.
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Danbury.
Aye.
Motion is 6-0. Motion passes. Is there a motion approving the net payroll dated October 31st, 2014, the amount of $352,707.79 in payment of various payroll deductions in the amount of $377,191.37 plus any matching payments?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Alderman Danbury.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderwoman Evans.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Motion 6-0 passes. Is there a motion approving the net payroll dated November 14th, estimated at $342,000, and payments in various payroll deductions estimated at $205,000 plus any city matching payments were required?
So moved.
Second.
Madam Clerk, please.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Evans.
Aye.
Alderman
Mayer.
Aye.
Aye.
Vote is 6-0. Motion passes. Is there a motion approving property tax refund number 13296 in the amount of $204.49 dated October 27th?
So moved.
Second.
Madam Clerk.
Alderman Danbury.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Evans.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Alderman
Mayer.
Aye.
Vote is 6-0. Motion carries. Is a motion approving voucher to BCF Construction in the amount of $114,008.50.
So moved.
Second.
Madam Clerk.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Evans.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Aye.
The vote is 6-0. Motion carries. I will remind everybody that our meeting tomorrow is in the hearing room. Voting is being held in here. A recording issue. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Under discussion, everybody thank your favorite clerk for the amount of work they've done this past 3 weeks. It's been crazy.
And if you could wish all the mayor of one day happy belated birthday, and Mayor Olson a couple of days coming up birthday.
No. A month. But Alderman Dandridge just had a birthday.
Okay.
So former Mayor Taylor would sing, "I'm not." Unless you get some bourbon. Yeah.
Really?
I don't sing at church. You can hear me where you sit. Motion to adjourn.
We did that.
Did
we
vote on it? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.